Right, Requiescat in pace, Tony Slattery, because Tony Slattery died just yesterday. So he was a well-known British actor and comedian, born in London into an Irish family, hurrah. So he, you know, grew up working class. He went to a state school, was academically outstanding, could easily have got a scholarship to a public school, but might have been happier in a state school. He was brought up in Catholicism, and decades later, he said he was molested by a priest. No idea whether that's true or not. He didn't tell his parents. Would they have disbelieved him? In those days, he may not have really recognized what happened to them. Might have just thought it would upset his parents too much. Anyway, he went on to study modern languages at Trinity Hall, Cambridge, one of Trinity's oldest colleges. So he read Spanish and French. He was a poetry aficionado. Of course, in those days, in the late 70s, it wasn't that difficult to get into Oxford, Cambridge, particularly for languages. I mean, I know someone who went there in the early 80s, and he said, if you apply to read classics or languages, that was it, you were in. The acceptance rate was like 90%, whereas even for those subjects, relatively easy subjects to get in for, is about 25% now. And when he went in the late 70s, there were rather few people from state schools who went up to Oxford and Cambridge. State schools educating about 93% of the population, but of those who went to Oxford and Cambridge back in those days, it might have been like 40%. I mean, particularly for modern languages. Having said that, a lot of people left school at 16 in those days, rather few people that did A-levels. So those who did A-levels, it wouldn't be 7%, it went to independent school, it would be way higher, particularly did something like languages. But the main thing is when he was there, he met Stephen Fry, Jan Raven, Sandy Toksvig, Hugh Laurie, Emma Thompson, Richard Branch, people in the Cambridge Footlights, which is their drama society, really, or maybe more like comedy, doing like review, has been going since the late 19th century. And so that cohort became really the kings and queens of British comedy through the 1980s into the 1990s. And he was a real Renaissance man, Tony Slattery. He was also a black belt in judo, so like multi-talented. He never descended into the deepest depths of lovey-dom. And he was a sort of person who apparently people in the West End, well, no one had a bad word to say about him. I mean, I never came within a mile of him, so far as I know, but said to be very agreeable. So they took their show, the Cambridge Footlights, to the Edinburgh Festival in the summer of 1981. Most of them graduated in the early 80s and were very well known at the time. Slattery was elected president of the Footlights, as in it's just a quip, because those small lights on the stage at foot level, they are called footlights. So that's how they came up with the name for themselves. And they got into television in the early 1980s. Now, back then, were there three channels? Was it just before the launch of Channel 4? So have you been on television once, you were famous, because you soon about a third of the public was watching you. It was a much, much bigger deal to be on telly back in those days than it is now. It's not like 1,000 TV channels, and no, you couldn't be YouTubing. So Chris Tarrant, I don't know if he's in broadcasting anymore, a very, very well-known DJ, he had a show called Saturday Stay Back, and he was on that. And then he became a regular on various things. He was best at improv, Whose Line Is It Anyway? So he was very quick-witted, and so known for his just razor sharp wit and ability to extemporize. But he was a serious actor. That's the thing about some people approach comedy really just as a comic, and some of them approach it more as a thespian. And he was more of a thesp, it seems to me. But anyway, he had bit parts. Peter's Friends, which is really about Stephen Fry and others. It's really Cambridge Footlights Friends plus Mates in about 1992. He appeared in that one, seemed to be perhaps a bit too nostalgic, harking back to varsity days. He was in To Die For. He had a small part in The Crying Game about this mixed race, transgender British soldier and an IRA terrorist. And this came out, you know, towards the end of the Ulster Troubles, The Wedding Tackle and various other things. So, yeah, he was just a regular on television. The Comedy Store was launched in London about 1980. The Comedy Store in New York is the original one, is going since the 70s. The Comedy Store is still going in London, not as original location. It was in Soho proper. It's now just off Leicester Square. And that was that really transformed British comedy. Yes, there have been the working men's clubs, seen, particularly in Northern England, stand up. This was different. This is much more, well, metropolitan, female friendly. They decided they had to have some comedians. And this was the new comedy, moved beyond the old staples of racial stereotypes, some jokes about women, mothers-in-law, and impersonation, stuff like that. So it broke new ground. I suppose it was sort of like proto-woke, not that it was objectionable, really. And it was loads of game shows, loads of things like Carry On Columbus. Despite his a talent for comedy, in some days, sometimes he's very reclusive. He said he battled mental health problems. He'd been so mistreated in his childhood. He was reliant on substances, and he was a dipsomaniac. So sometimes he would just disappear for weeks on end. And he got various comedy festivals going around in places like Leicester, which didn't have much of a comedy scene, is a rather forgettable city. He was elected rector of the University of Dundee. So the undergraduates, I think it is, elect their rector. And didn't Stephen Fry hold that office before him, after him? I don't remember. So he's still a very well-known figure in the 90s. I mean, more recent years, he's rather took a backseat, but he was still going up to the Edinburgh Festival a few years ago, often taking part in other people's shows. So he was very, very well off. But he said, you know, a lot of it was gobbled up by his addictions. Anyway, he was gay, but he was not someone who was sort of a badge-wearing, march-attending type. He had a long-term relationship with a guy called Mark Michael Hutchinson, who was also an actor, not half so well-known. So he never adopted children or anything like that. And he died just a few days ago. He'd agreed to write his memoirs, though I don't think he did. So he appeared in some documentaries talking about his mental health battles. But that is Tony Slattery, one of the less well-known ones of that set. I mean, Stephen Fry, I'm a huge fan of him, even though I find him annoying at times. And too navel-gazing, Red Moab was my wash pot. The Fry Chronicles are what really just devoured almost everything by him. I remember Stephen Fry saying that the rest of that social set, they mostly came from public school, well, upper middle class. Tony Slattery decidedly didn't, but still fitted in. The others were like not remotely snobbish, and he didn't appear to have any chip on his shoulder, wasn't resentful of them. So although he's Irish, it's not a part of his identity he particularly emphasized. I think some Irish people who are born outside of Ireland, they perhaps overcompensate and over-protestation, bespeak some profound sense of inadequacy, but he was not someone who was obliged to make a song and a dance out of it. I mean, I don't think he denied it either. It's an identifiably Irish surname. Well, that is Tony Slattery. Well, thank you for watching my video. Would you be so kind as to subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.